Sarum, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So we are on the 21st of April, 2021, a very sacred Thursday. The date is 21, and we just celebrated the holy festival of Rama Navami. And you take any spiritual instruction, you take any spiritual guidance, you take any spiritual principle, and you will find lots of examples, lots of elaborations, illustrations about it in the Ramayana. Swami used to always narrate the stories from the Ramayana. Swami would always exhort the students to live up to the ideals as exemplified by the characters of Ramayana. And as we contemplate on chapter 11 of Sandeha Nivarini, probably we will also take some lessons from Ramayana to understand the concepts that Bhagavan is telling us in this chapter. In the previous session, we discussed the first segment of chapter 11, where Bhagavan talked about Brahman as Asti Bhati Priyam. Swami explained what is Asti, what is Bhati, what is Priyam. Asti is that which is, Bhati is that which shines, and Priyam is that which is pleasing. And how Bhagavan told us that Asti Bhati Priyam is what Sat Chit Anandam is all about. And what obstructs us from realizing this are so many obstacles which Bhagavan calls as Pratibandhas. So there are past obstacles, bhuta pratibandhas. And while explaining about Priyam, Swami said, if you dearly love a dog, that dog too is Brahman. The dog has a name and fame. If you remove both your name and form and the dog's name and form, then what remains is Brahman alone. So once you remove the exteriors, that is how you can get over the past obstructions or the bhuta pratibandhas. And Bhagavan, in detail with lot of examples, clarified to us about Asti Bhati Priyam, how it is nothing but Sat Chit Anandam. And then as the chapter continued, the bhakta ask Bhagavan, you talked about bhuta pratibandhas or the obstructions of the past, but Swami, tell us, what are the obstructions of the present? And then Bhagavan answers this question and lists four obstructions of the present that prevent us from spiritual awakening. So what are they? Let's listen to Bhagavan, segment 11.2 of Sandeha Nivarini.
Now I know what is meant by the obstruction of the past. What are the obstructions of the present?
Good, I shall tell you. The obstructions of the present are of four types: attachment to sense objects, cynical criticism, dullness of understanding, and absurd conceit. The first is the case of attachment to objects that attract the senses. The second makes men discover wrong meanings in the teachings of the Guru. The third causes confusion because things explained by the Guru are not grasped at all. The last obstruction makes one feel that one is a great scholar, pundit, or ascetic mistaking the body and the senses for the Atma.
And what are the obstructions of the future?
Oh, they come always through sinful deeds. They come and obstruct unawares.
How are we to meet them, Swami?
It is not possible for all. The sincere aspirant can to some extent know of the approaching sinful deeds with certainty, which could be in the nature of compassion leading to attachment. This should be recognized as an obstruction of the future. It is difficult to be forewarned like this as the result of the effort of one single life. It may take many lives to acquire this education.
Are there any who have so learnt it?
Why, there are. The scriptures speak of Bharata and Vasudeva. Bharata required 2 or 3 births. Vasudeva had to be born once.
That means these 3 obstructions cannot be known unless one takes many lives. Can we not succeed without all that bother?
Why? The aspirant can, by reasoning out the nature of these 3, escape from being affected by them. Otherwise, undoubtedly, it may take many lives.
So, talking about the present obstructions, Swami says there are 4 types. The first is attachment to sense objects. And then there are 3 more: cynical criticism, dullness of understanding, and absurd conceit. Let's take the first one. Swami says it is attachment to objects that attract the senses. I remember a youth asking a spiritual master, "The senses are given to us to experience the world. Why are we being asked to control the senses? The senses are meant so that we can enjoy the world. That is the reason why the senses have been gifted to man. The eyes have been given so that we can see beautiful things. The ears are given so that we can hear interesting stuff. The tongue is given so that we can eat tasty food. Why are you telling us that we should control the senses?" This is often the question that youngsters grapple with, because they find it really difficult to control the senses. And that is the reason why Bhagwan very beautifully said, "Ceasing on desires." He did not say ceasing of desires. It is not complete stop of desires. It's only ceasing. Everything needs to be done in limits. And everything has its own time. If a baby is simply dancing, you will smile, you will laugh, you will feel very happy. But if a youngster mindlessly dances, you'll think he's gone crazy. What's wrong with him? When we eat food, if we eat the amount that is needed to appease our hunger, then it is nice. If we eat healthy food, it will give us energy. But if we eat more than what is needed, in fact, they say you should eat a little less than how much you are supposed to eat, which will make you really full. You should not eat to the brim. If you think you can eat 100%, you should eat up to 70-80% and leave some space. And that is the reason why they say you should sit down and eat, because if you sit down, you cannot overeat. If you sit on the chair, you will definitely be able to eat more. So if we eat whatever is necessary for us, that will give us energy. But if we eat more than that, then that will lead to disease, isn't it? In fact, instead of the food giving us energy, the food will tire us. So what is it that is expected when again and again spiritual masters, spiritual scriptures, Bhagwan himself, everyone is asking us to control the senses? When it is natural for the senses to attach themselves to objects, the senses will see things outside. As Swami says, that is, if you want to call it the manufacturing defect that is there in every person, the senses will look outside. But is it the senses that are seeing? Is it the eye that sees? If it is the eye that sees, then when a person is lifeless, his eyes continue to exist. His ears continue to exist. They don't disappear. But he cannot hear. He cannot see. The tongue is still there, but the tongue cannot taste anymore. In the Bhagavad Gita, there is this shloka, Tani Sarvani Samyam. Tani Sarvani Samyam Yukta Asita Matparaha Vashe Vashehi Yasyasya Indriyani Yasyena Indriyani Vashehi Yasyena Indriyani Tasya Pragnya Pratishthitaha. Which means, one who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, that person is known as a man of steady intelligence, Lord Krishna says. One who restrains his senses and keeps them under control, and what do you do then with the senses? Fix your consciousness upon me. If you control your senses and fix your mind on me, that man is a man of steady intelligence. There is this beautiful story of King Ambarisha from the Treta Yuga. He belonged to the Ikshvaku dynasty. It's a very sacred story from the Bhagavatam, very powerful story. Ambarisha was a very learned man, and as a king, he considered his subjects as his own children. His subjects were like parts of his own body. He took care of his people so well that everyone knew that if they had any problem, there was this king to look after us. The king was like God to them. Ambarisha was very grounded in spiritual and scriptural injunctions. Anityam asukham lokam. The world is temporary. The world is sorrowful. He knew about all this. He wanted to live a life. He led a life that attached itself to God and understood the world as unreal. Everything connected with the body is based on attachment, not It has got nothing to do with love. Attachment is bondage. So he was someone, Bhagwan says, who knew this. And he not just knew this, but he was living this in his life. And he realized this very early in his life. And that is the reason why he only wanted the treasure of God's proximity, not worldly attachments. In his immense devotion and pure love to the Lord, he saw the Lord in everyone. And so he treated everyone with respect, with love, with care. And he had complete control over his senses. In spite of his immense wealth and power, he was never rude or arrogant in his action, in his word or deed. He was always engrossed thinking of the Lord. No negative thought ever dared to step into his heart. When he was eating, he was thinking of Hari. When he was breathing, he was thinking of Hari. If he was hearing anything, it was only the glory of Hari. If he was speaking, it was Hari that he was remembering. So that is how King Ambarisha was. One sage Vasishtha and Gautama instructed King Ambarisha to perform the Ashwamedha Yagya. And many kings had performed the Ashwamedha sacrifice successfully. Swami says, even though so many had done it, nobody had done it the way King Ambarisha did. He conducted it magnificently and he gave away so many things in charity. Cow, land, gold, people, articles that people had never seen before, heard before, he gave them all in charity. He just forgot that he was a king. He just forgot his kingdom. He forgot his own body. His mind was fully on Lord Narayana. And Lord Narayana was so pleased with this one-pointed concentration of Ambarisha that at the end of the Ashwamedha sacrifice, Lord Narayana appeared and pleased with his devotion, gifted him his personal weapon, Sudarshana Chakra. The Sudarshana Chakra, which is the emblematic weapon of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu gave it to Ambarisha, pleased with his devotion. Of course, Bhagwan goes on to explain what is Sudarshana. You might think of it as a disc endowed with power. Swami says that is the superficial meaning. The spiritual meaning is Sudarshana, Sudarshan. Su is good, darshan is sight, good sight. The ability to see everything in its true light. Anyone who has that kind of sight obviously will be blessed with such gifts of the Lord. So armed with this blessing of Sudarshana, Ambarisha was able to lead a very peaceful life and surmount all the difficulties in his life. He had no worries, no desires, no sorrow. He just looked after the kingdom in the best manner possible. And his heart and mind were always on the feet of the Lord. Sometime later, King Ambarisha was instructed by sage Vasishtha to perform the Dwadasi Vrata. It is a 12-month vow. So you have to observe certain disciplines for 12 months. And Ambarisha was to fast on the day prior to the completion of the one-year period. He had done this for one whole year. And that one day fast that you have to do as you complete the 1 year period of sadhana, that had to be a very strict fast where you don't take anything, not even a drop of water, nirjala, tapana, upavasa. So the fast was to be broken at a particular time the next day, just before the end of the year. And it is very important also that the fast has to be broken at that particular time for the benefit of the vow to manifest. And after the king breaks the fast by himself partaking something, then he was supposed to feed all his people. There were so many stipulations of the vow, and he was following it to the T, he was following all the disciplines, and he had done that the whole year. Now it was time for that last month, and it came to the last day where the 24 hours he had to keep complete fast. So when he was going through this, the last day, suddenly sage Durvasa appeared there. Quite unexpectedly, he arrives there. And Ambarisha, being the noble man that he was, he welcomed sage Durvasa. Sage Durvasa is a very, very respected, venerable sage. And Durvasa congratulated Ambarisha and said, "O king, no one has performed such a vow in the world. You will achieve great fame. Your kingdom will always experience peace and abundance." So he started complimenting and congratulating Ambarisha on his sadhana. And Ambarisha, in all humility, prayed to Durvasa, "O sage, you must accept my hospitality today, having come to my place. You must accept and give me the chance to serve you food." And Durvasa said, with pleasure, but just give me some time. I will just go to the river, bathe, and complete my daily prayers and return." And Durvasa left to the river. And Durvasa also is never alone. He came with his entourage. And for some strange reason, Durvasa was taking time. He did not come in the time that Ambarisha expected he would be back. Now, Ambarisha was getting worried because the time had come for him to break the fast. And he did not want to eat when there is a guest. He wanted to eat along with the guest. It would be very discourteous to eat before the guest. He thought Durvasa will be back. There was enough time, but Durvasa does not show up. Even after a long time, Durvasa did not come, and now he didn't know what to do. While the etiquette of a host demanded that he cannot eat before offering food to the guest. On the other hand, the rules of the Dwadasi Vrata dictated that Ambarisha had to eat before the auspicious moment of the completion of 1 year. And that moment had arrived. And Ambarisha did not know what to do. He was so worried. During the war, the whole year, he was so peaceful. But now, he was in such a big moral dilemma. And he sought guidance from sage Vasishtha. And Vasishtha suggested that maybe he can touch a few drops of tulasi water and place them on his lips to break the fast. He need not eat, but just put one or two drops of water. So that will symbolically break the fast because it was a nirjala upavasa. And Vasishtha said, "Don't worry. No fault will accrue with this symbolic breaking of the fast." And so Ambarisha obeyed the suggestion of King Vasishtha. So that's what he did when the auspicious moment arrived, and now he waited for Durvasa to return to have proper meal. And after the moment had elapsed, then Durvasa showed up. And Durvasa, being the powerful sage that he was, he divined Ambarisha's action. He came to know of how Ambarisha had broken his fast. And so he felt insulted. He came to Ambarisha and said, "You are blind with pride." Ambarisha said, "Honorable sage, what is my fault? What did I do? How dare you act so innocent?" Durvasa was known for his anger. He said, "You are simply playing smart. You invite me as a guest and then you eat before you serve me. Is this not a violation of the principles of hospitality? I am a Maharshi. I am not an ordinary guest and you have insulted me. This is not what was expected of you." And Ambarisha did not know what to do. He begged forgiveness. He claimed innocence. And he said, "This is the suggestion I received and I didn't know what to do." And it's not as if Ambarisha had eaten something. He just put few drops of water. That's it. But Durvasa was not willing to listen. Durvasa felt that he should have waited for me to come. And Durvasa, who would get angry in the split of a second now, suddenly was very furious and he was adamant. And in that moment of fury, he plucked one hair from his head and he empowered it with a mantra. And he plashed it on the ground and out of that emerged a terrible demoness. And this demoness appeared there. And this demoness was now marching towards Ambarisha to kill Ambarisha. And Ambarisha did not know what to do except call out for Lord Narayana, because that is how he was. And in a flash, the Sudarshana Chakra that Lord Narayana had gifted him, that appeared. Because Sudarshana Chakra was gifted by Narayana to Ambarisha, and the Sudarshana Chakra was there all the time protecting Ambarisha. So the chakra appeared and the chakra put an end to the demoness. And now the Sudarshana Chakra then turned towards sage Durvasa. After killing the demoness, the chakra now started chasing Durvasa. Now Durvasa started running. And Sudarshana Chakra started following him through the forest, hills, rivers, desert plains. Durvasa was frantically trying to escape from the Sudarshana Chakra. And Durvasa ran and ran, as the legend goes. And finally, he went to Brahmaloka. He went to the abode of Lord Brahma. And he said, "Oh Brahma, I am helpless. I cannot challenge Lord Narayana's power. I don't know, this Sudarshana Chakra of Lord Narayana is chasing me. Please help me. Please help me." And Lord Brahma says, "See, I cannot do anything. It is Lord Narayana's weapon. I am the Lord's servant. I cannot help you. Please, I'm sorry. I cannot challenge the power of Lord Narayana." So Durvasa did not know what to do. And Durvasa now fled to Kailasa, as they say. He went to Lord Shiva's abode and prayed, Oh Shankara, please help me, please help me. Chakra is chasing me." And Lord Shiva says, "I don't have any power to oppose Narayana's will. It is Lord Narayana's weapon is following the Lord's command. I cannot do anything that contradicts his will. Sorry, I cannot help you." Now, Durvasa did not know what to do and he finally ran and fell at the feet of Lord Narayana. I said, "Oh Narayana, please help me. Your chakra is just chasing me. Your chakra is taking the life out of me. Please save me, save me." And the Lord said, "Oh Durvasa, can't you see my helplessness? I may be all powerful, but you know what? There is one bond that I cannot break. And that is the bond that I have with devotees who have renounced everything for me. the devotees who have given everything to me, who live for me, who breathe for me, with them that bond that I have, that is my weakness. I cannot do. I am powerless in front of that. I always submit myself to my devotees. And Ambarisha is one such devotee. He's renounced everything. And he only wants me. I cannot deny such surrender and such faith. The power of his love, his prema shakti, is greater than my own will, my icha shakti. The prema shakti of Ambarisha is greater than my own will, my own icha shakti. I cannot help you. I really cannot help you. But I can suggest you a solution. Okay, tell me, Lord, tell me what can I do before this chakra beheads me? And Narayana says, you go back to Ambarisha. You seek the pardon of Ambarisha only. He will only help you. And so again, back to square one, Durvasa, the one who had cursed Ambarisha and wanted to kill him, now was running to the feet of Ambarisha, and he fell at Ambarisha's feet and started begging for his life. And Ambarisha was so taken aback. He said, my God, why is Durvasa such a great sage falling at my feet? He was embarrassed. Oh, great sage, you are one of the pioneers. You are rich in penance and wisdom. Don't please fall on my feet. What are you doing? I'm an ordinary man. I'm just a king. And Durvasa says, I am very sorry. I made you suffer without recognizing your sincere devotion. I made you suffer because of my mindless pride, and you are the one who has controlled the senses. And here Durvasa lost his anger. Durvasa was the one who did not know how to rein in his emotions. And then Ambarisha prayed to Durvasa, prayed to Lord Narayana for Durvasa. And he said, oh Lord Vishnu, you are the embodiment of love and compassion. You know everything. Please, please, please forgive sage Durvasa and please rescue him. And only when Ambarisha prayed to Lord Narayana, that is when Sudarshana Chakra stopped pursuing the sage. The reason I mentioned this story is King Ambarisha was someone who had controlled his senses. Not only controlled his senses, but also learned to fix them on the Lord. When you control the senses and you are able to fix them on the Lord, King Ambarisha fixed his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. His words were engaged, his words in describing the abode of the Lord. His hands were cleaning the temple of the Lord. His ears were hearing the stories of the Lord. His eyes were seeing the form of the Lord. His body was touching the shrine of the Lord. His nostrils were smelling the flavor of the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord. His tongue was tasting the sweet bliss of chanting his name, the taste of tulasi leaves offered to the Lord. His legs were moving to the places which were made holy with the Lord's chanting. His head was offering obeisances to the Lord. He had no desire but the Lord. It is because he had learned to turn the senses away from the world and fix them to the Lord, that he was in a position to be so powerful that even the Lord had to say, I am helpless in front of you. I am helpless. Even my willpower is nothing in front of your love. And that is what Bhagwan is telling here. It's so important to control the senses. Yes, it is difficult. But the reason why many times we fail to do it is we think we will miss the joys of life, we will miss the pleasures of life, we will miss these little enjoyments of life. But the truth is, just like if someone is happy with an ice cream when he can get nectar, and he hails that ice cream as nectar, we will think how foolish this person is. He doesn't even know. He's thinking that ice cream is nectar, that ice cream is just 5 rupees. Nectar is, even a million times of the ice cream is not nectar. The one who experiences that will never ever want the ice cream. But nectar is not so easy to get. Ice cream is very easy to get, but ice cream will only make you sick. And the joy of the ice cream will last just for a few seconds. But once you strive to experience the nectar, it will capture you so much. Once you experience that one drop also, everything else of the world you will forget, and you will want to be in that nectarous bliss. Anything, any pleasure of the joy of the world will be nothing in front of that. Just so that we can graduate to higher joys, to lasting happiness, that the Lord asks us to control the senses. Because only then you can get something which will give you true freedom, which will not bind you, which will not give you little pleasure and more sorrows. You'll move to a phase where you'll get unceasing happiness. And the eternal well-wisher that the Lord is, that is the reason why the Lord always, Bhagwan always talked about limiting one's desires. But yes, it might seem difficult, but it is not very difficult once one decides to do those little experiments in life. Once you experience the joy of seva, you will find that, yeah, this is so fulfilling. Why was I into that bad habit? I was into gambling for joy. But once I did seva, I realized that seva is giving me much more joy. And this joy is so fulfilling. This joy is so energizing. This joy is so reinvigorating. The so-called pleasures of the world, actually they drain you. They don't energize you. Every time you think you are enjoying, but actually, as Swami said, the senses are enjoying you. But actually what we should do is, we should use the senses in such a way that we enjoy them. They should not be enjoying us. When they enjoy us, they drain us. And Bhagwan used to give so many examples from the Ramayana. How when Rama and Sugriva meet, and they are discussing about finding Sita, and that is when Sugriva reveals to Rama that one day when he was engaged in exchanging counsel with his ministers, he heard this cry, Rama, Rama, from the sky, and how from the Pushpaka Vimana, from the chariot which was flying in the sky, they saw this strange scene of a lady throwing a bundle tied in cloth down to where they were discussing, and it was a bundle of jewels, and so they had preserved it intact and safe. and they had seen how a Ravana, how a Rakshasa was carrying the lady away. And then when they bring those jewels, Rama asks for this bundle of jewels, and when Sugriva retrieves from the cave where he had safely hidden it, once they open the bundle, Rama looks at Lakshmana and Rama asks Lakshmana, "Can you identify them? Are these not the jewels of our Sita?" And then Bhagwan says how Lakshmana said, "Brother, O Rama, I can identify the toorings that my sister-in-law wore, because every morning I used to prostrate at her feet. Yes, these are verily her toorings. I can vouchsafe for this. While moving through the jungles, I used to follow her. I used to walk in her footsteps." It was Rama, Sita, and then Lakshmana. "So I know her feet. I know her toorings. But if you ask me about the other jewels, I am sorry." Bhagwan says, "Look at the self-control and humility of Lakshmana. How many brothers today can claim that depth of reverence and purity?" Controlling the senses ensures that your energies are elevated, energies are preserved and sublimated for higher causes. They give you tremendous strength. Bhagwan always used to talk about Hanuman. Gunavantudu, Balavantudu, Hanumantudu, Swami used to always say. And if you look at the life of Hanuman, there are so many such beautiful examples of what you could do with control of senses, and you get a lot of clues about how to do that. There are sattvic challenges we face in life. There are rajasic challenges we face in life. There are tamasic challenges we face in life. And we learn from Hanuman. When Hanuman was flying across the ocean to Lanka, the Mainak mountain appeared from the ocean and told Hanuman, "Why don't you take a little rest? You can probably take another leap from here. You can feast on the fruits on the trees which are growing on me." But Hanuman very politely said, "I am busy doing the Lord's work, and I don't want even a second's delay." Hanuman just came down, touched the mountain politely, and just moved on. Sometimes when we want to do good also, there will be people who will give us convenient philosophies. You want to, for example, go for bhajans in the night and someone will say, it's okay, why do you want to go there? God is everywhere, Swami is there everywhere. You sit here and do. It's okay. It's important that, you know, you do it with devotion. It's okay. It's not that you have to sit for 12 hours. Even 1 hour is fine. Just do it with devotion. We always take all these convenient philosophies. When boys, sometimes students go home for holidays, and there you'll find sometimes parents who will pamper the children and say, oh, you have not tasted restaurant food for very long, you have not seen movies for very long, it's okay, you can indulge now. So there are these times when we are challenged, and even though you mean good, people using convenient philosophies will stray us from the right path. And then there are rajasic challenges. So for the first challenge, sattvic challenge, what did Hanuman do? Hanuman just quietly heard Mount Mainak and went ahead and did what he wanted to do. Because for Hanuman, taking rest when you're doing God's work is a sin. So he did not budge from what he wanted to do. Similarly, when we are faced with challenges, there'll be people saying, it's okay, you can miss today's bhajan. You need not have to go this seva every time. It's okay. There'll be so many people giving so many kind of suggestions. And sometimes we may fall for it. And we may get deviated from our sadhana. So what we should do is just listen. And then go ahead and do what you thought, what you think is right. Anything that takes us towards God is right. Anything that takes us away from God is not right. And there are rajasic challenges. Now, as Hanuman was crossing the ocean, the other thing that happened was there was this demoness Surasa, serpent demoness. She had a boon from Lord Brahma that whoever passes that area has to become her food. That person has to enter her mouth. And what did Hanuman do? Hanuman said, oh mother, I am on Lord's work. Just let me complete the work and after that I will offer myself to you. I know nobody can cross this path without entering your mouth, but I am happy to do it. I have no problem. You have got Brahma's boon. I cannot not obey that. But you just allow me now to go. Let me finish my Lord's work. After that you do what you want. But Surasa says, nothing doing. This is a boon from Brahma. You have to enter my mouth. And so what does Hanuman do? Hanuman prays to Lord Rama and immediately he expands himself to the height of 100 yojanas, as they say. As he becomes 100 times more. He becomes so tall. And then when Surasa opens her mouth to the level of 100 yojanas, as they say, more than 100 kilometers. So, possibly. So, when she opens her mouth, that huge Hanuman suddenly becomes very small. He goes into her mouth and comes out quickly before she closes her mouth. And says, see mother, I have done what you asked me to do. I was supposed to go into your mouth. I went to your mouth and I came out. But you could not catch me, so it's not my mistake. So now you please allow me to go. And Surasa, the demoness, was so pleased. She said, nobody had ever done this. You passed my test. I don't know what is your mission, but I'm blessing you that you will be victorious in your mission. This was how Hanuman dealt with a rajasic challenge. So it happens in our real life where you're working in a company and your boss will say, no, this is what you have to do. This is a norm of the company. This is what you have to do as a professional. You know, you cannot say, I will not do this. There was this old student, Brother Giridhar. He was supposed to go to London and make a presentation on behalf of his company for a big contract worth millions of dollars. And being his first such big assignment, he was very nervous. And sitting outside the boardroom where he had to go and make the presentation, he was very tensed, and he suddenly remembered something that Bhagwan had told him. Many years ago, there was this practice of flute being played for 15 minutes before bhajan start in the evening. And one such day, when he was sitting in the portico, Bhagwan was there and Swami was talking to him, and Swami asked him this simple question, "Giridhar, where is this music coming from?" And Giridhar said, "Swami, from the speaker above," because there was a speaker right above the head. Swami said, no, Giridhar, wrong answer. This is only a speaker. Music is not coming from there. Music is coming from within, from inside the hall, from the bhajan hall. That is the sanctum sanctorum. From that is the place from where music comes. So he remembered that how we are just speakers. Music comes from within, from the source. That gave him a lot of strength. He felt he's just a speaker. God within is the source. Music will come from God within. And with that confidence, he was able to deal with that situation. There was another devotee who was the head of a very prestigious organization at the national level, and he was the head of an industrial house. As part of the ceremony of being appointed as the chairman of that company, it was mandatory to raise a toast, which means, you know, you have to have wine with your colleagues. And he was Bhagwan's devotee, and he avoided drinking, smoking in his life. And he was wondering what to do, because there was this glass of wine, and it was a mandatory ritual which he cannot avoid. But what did Hanuman do? Hanuman used his intelligence, his yukti. He had to go into the mouth of Surasa, but he did it in such a way that Surasa herself was stunned and pleased. So this devotee also, what did he do? He took that wine glass, and as he was talking to people very cleverly, with no one noticing him, he went around the hall, and there were a few flower pots along the side of the room, and he just went, and as he was talking to each person, he would clink the glass and raise the toast and slowly pour a bit of the wine into one of those flower pots, unnoticed by anyone. And by the time, you know, he finished talking to everyone, his glass was empty. So there are 100 ways how we can think how to come out of a tricky situation where we don't fall into the trap of our senses, of our mind. And Hanuman shows us how you can surmount these challenges which your senses, the society put on you, by praying, using your intelligence, by praying to Bhagwan to give you that strength, to give you that idea, give you that methodology, how to circumvent these issues. Just like when a boss told one of our former students, "You should come to the club and enjoy. You should come to the club where I go." And this student said, "I will come, sir, but I have my condition. You should come for bhajan into my house. If you come for bhajan to my house, I will definitely come to the club. Unless you give me the pleasure of your company, I cannot come to the club." So, you know, there are so many ways by which we can think about how to deal with these situations. And then there are tamasic challenges. What is that? One of the other demons that Hanuman had to deal with was called Simika or Chayagrihi. Chayagrihi. Now, Chayagrihi means the one who has the power to drag the object by the shadow. So, when Hanuman was flying towards Lanka, this demoness had the power to drag any flying object by its shadow on the sea. So, when Hanuman's shadow fell on this sea, this demoness pulled Hanuman to herself. And Hanuman, when it came to Chayagrihi, did no talking, nothing. Hanuman just gave one strong blow and that demoness died. Sometimes there are certain challenges which you have to take head on. You want to get up early in the morning, but your body is not cooperating. The body says, no, it's okay, another 5 minutes, no, another 10 minutes, another 15 minutes. You just have to say, forget it, I have to just get up. I cannot be lazy, I cannot keep succumbing. You think I will put the data off. I don't want to see anything more now. It's time for me to sleep. But you'll think, but you know, there will be this temptation. Okay, I will just see this 10 minutes. I'll see that 15 minutes. And that is how slowly senses take charge of you. And before you realize, you would have slept 1 hour, 1.5 hours late, 2 hours late. And you get up late the next day and the whole day is completely not gone the way you would have wanted it to go. So there are so many ways by which we can deal with these senses. We have to ensure that we not only not get carried away by the senses, but also ensure that we use that energy that is not dissipated to focus on the Lord. That is very important. That is what is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. If you can control the senses and fix your mind on the Lord, that is when you will be blessed with wisdom. And once you are blessed with that wisdom, once the grace of God enters our heart, all the impurities just melt away. So all the obstacles of the present will just fade away. So Swami says, for the first obstacle of the present is attachment to objects that attract the senses. And that is what we discussed today to a little extent. And there are so much that can be shared. There are 3 more obstacles of the present and we will take those up in the coming episodes of Vahini Satsang. Dear listeners, all of these are spiritual concepts and ideas which are very potent. One has to make that effort to practice. Only then we will experience the joy and the power of our scriptures and we will experience the bliss of moving closer to God. Let's make that effort and let's pray to Him to give us that energy, that inspiration, and that zeal. As always, if you have any queries, you can write to listener@ssmediacenter.org. You can also send us your queries by writing to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Let me end with this beautiful bhajan, which describes the glory of Hanuman. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.
Veer dheer shura Hanuman ki jai. Veer dheer shura Hanuman ki jai. Veer dheer shura Hanuman ki jai. Veer dheer shura पवन पुत्र अंजनेय हनुमान की जय पुत्र अंजनेय हनुमान की जय पवन पुत्र अंजनेय हनुमान की जय पुत्र अंजनेय हनुमान की जय धीर धीर शूरा हनुमान की जय धीर धीर शूरा सदा राम नाम जपत हनुमान की जय सदा राम नाम जपत हनुमान शोक नाश करण हनुमान की शोक नाश करण हनुमान की धीर धीर शोरा हनुमान की जय।